This is GamesAtWork.biz with your hosts, Phaedra Boynodiris, Michael Martin, and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone, and not the opinions of any organization with which we have been, are, or may be affiliated.
This is Games at Work, episode 51, T, Bojangles, Sweet, and was recorded Friday, the 28th of June, 2013.
Good morning to a lovely day here in sunny Cary, North Carolina. We are here broadcasting to you live, gamesatwork.biz. Now, I am your co-host, Phaedra Boynodiris, and Michael Martin is joining me from lovely Budapest.
Yes, from the Buddha side of the river, to be precise, and it's raining today, and luckily the hard, big drops of rain have stopped falling, which would have distracted you for sure, because they were just bouncing off the windows.
That bad, huh?
Oh, it was bad. It was a hard rain. Mm. We're missing our co-host Michael Rowe today due to unexpected sudden loss of cabin pressure or meeting schedules or something like that, so... So, why, Michael? We miss you. But
we've got a great show for you guys today. We're going to start off talking about a book that has raised not a small amount of controversy, and that is Dan Brown's latest book, Inferno. And you're probably wondering, what does this have to do with games? Did you read the book, Michael?
Absolutely. In fact, I read the entire thing on my way back from North Carolina to Budapest, because I needed something to read, and Dan Brown books are great reads for that sort of thing.
Agreed. So for those of you who are in the know or not in the know, what this book in essence is about is our erstwhile hero is up against a new villain who believes that the world is in essence becoming overpopulated very, very quickly and that he's got to do something about it. And it just, the reason I wanted to talk about it on in this show is that I think this is a perfect example of something that serious games might be able to be used for. Not just running different kinds of what-if scenarios, but in essence being able to vet public policy around what could we do should this in fact be what we're up against as a human species.
Exactly. And what struck me, too, is that we've had games that are like this for quite a long time. We've done modeled UNs before. We've done virus simulation scenario building before, where you would have people playing the roles of prime ministers or presidents of various countries and say, OK, this is what you've learned is occurring in your neighbor country. You have choices of what you can do. Are you going to close the borders? Are you going to search everyone? Are you going to quarantine? How do you react to the steps that you need to react to, right?
Agreed. Yes, indeed. And in fact, there was some great bit of news that was on Wired Magazine and Ars Technica talking about the new discovery of three super Earths. Hopefully within travel distance once we figure out the whole warp speed problem. but I mean, that could be a potential solution to this whole overpopulation thing. And it would just be interesting to see, okay, what would we do with food supply? What would we do with this? What would we do with that in terms of evolution, in terms of what kinds of technologies we invest in, or what kinds of public policies we adopt? So interesting.
I hadn't seen that yet. So you said three super Earths within striking distance, huh? Potentially?
Yeah. In fact, within the constellation Scorpio.
Ooh. All of them there?
That's what they said.
Huh. Oh, well, I'll have to take a look at that. Because wouldn't it be cool to be on said spaceship and say, tea, Earl Grey, hot. Actually, I would probably say, tea, Bojangles, sweet.
Bojangle. That would be nice.
That might be our show title. Oh, seriously. That was the first place we stopped when we came back to the U.S. It's like, oh, man.
Bojangles.
I kind of do the same thing when I'm out west in California, Arizona, too. I definitely go for an In-N-Out burger right away. But Yeah, so I think the Dan Brown book does lend itself really nicely to those kinds of thinking and that kind of gameplay and game simulation. It would almost be fun to have the book be one of those interactive things where you could be playing the game alongside of the book as you're reading it, sort of as a dual mode effort along the lines of what we've been talking about with Michael in the last couple of episodes too.
Yeah. And you could, in essence, be kind of like a, you know, president of the universe. And so you've got to decide, how am I going to make investments in different technologies? And how am I going to evolve? Do I invest in public policy? Do I invest in space travel? You know, what do I do in order to ensure that, you know, the human species is able to survive this?
And Dan Brown does such a fabulous thing in all of his books, you know, whether we're talking about Angels and Demons or any of the other books that he has, where he has all these clues that are, you know, kind of based in fact and based in architecture and based in reality that you then have to kind of construct together. Wouldn't it be fun that you could play this game or this book, you know, from different perspectives, right?
That would be fun.
You could be the villain and say, all right, well, you know, I'm going to use this particular painting or sculpture and do something a little bit different.
Agreed. And it also certainly lends to an alternate reality style game, you know, where you're doing the research. All right, where's the tomb of so-and-so? And let me look at that painting and, you know, what's the little clues here and sort of picking it apart. It is. It's they're fun reads because they're like mini games. You know, they're mysteries.
Right. And they're puzzles that are built into them, too. Like you would have mini games inside of a major game, too.
Yeah, agreed.
Dan Brown, call us. We have some ideas for you.
We got plans.
So at the outset of the show, I asked to say, can we do something a little different, but certainly within the realms of our games? And we've done a cutout before like this where we said, where's the game in it? I think is sort of we've had a segment like that. So this is a little variation on it. So we've been talking about mobility and about social and about games and how they kind of all are clicking together. And I had a conversation a little bit earlier today, and I came up with a phrase that I really love in a lot of ways, and that is mobile isn't just with your thumb, right? So when you think about it, and today, you know, you've got a device that you will hold in your hand, and you can kind of use your device one-handed and do everything you might want to while you're walking down the road. That's today's mobile reality, you know, where you're using a smartphone or you're using a tablet. There are people I've seen walk around with laptops and kind of do stuff too. You probably have too, Phaedra, you know, running from meeting to meeting on the elevator and trying to write something to someone. But in the not too distant future, computing is going to be wearable, and it is, and it's going to be embeddable. Right. You know, we've talked many times before about, you know, contact lenses, you know, being computing interface devices or transdermal tattoos that convey information, electronic signals, or even, you know, there are people walking around right now with pacemakers, and those are, you know, those embeddable computing. There might be other reasons why you do that. So let's imagine for just a moment that we flash forward, I don't know, 5 years even, could be less, but let's just say 5 years. And we're playing games that have embeddable technology, wearable embeddable technology built into them. What would those games look like or feel like?
Well,
what do you think?
One thing you could do is kind of riff off of the whole MMORPG thing where you're wearing something that tells everybody who's also playing the game that you're a sorcerer and you've got XYZ skills, right? And when you get within a certain radius of each other, the players of this game, you've got skill sets that are either matched or mismatched, and you've got certain micro goals that you need to work on together face to face. I mean, maybe it's kind of like digitally enhanced alternate reality game in person. I don't know. I don't quite know what the wording is for this, but that could potentially be something.
So
I know that there's been work with regards to this idea of the MMO using mobile phones that, you know, you'll have a mobile game and you've got a persona and it's all flashed with, what is it? Or I think it's passive RFID, but I could be wrong. Mm-hmm. But in essence, you know, people within a certain radius, you know, if you're passing each other on the escalator, it'll say, alert, alert, you know, there's a level 25 mage coming down, you know, within 5 feet of you, or maybe something like that. I don't know.
That would be kind of cool. So you would be able to detect one another playing the same game because of their aura, perhaps, right? And that aura would be detectable because your wrist, which is where your computer is embedded in you, might vibrate a bit,
mm-hmm.
or pulse in a particular way to say, oh, that was a mage versus a fighter or something like that.
Right, right. So, and then you bring in Google Glass, and now when you look at that person who's wearing this wearable device, you may not see a person. You might see a mage. You see what I'm saying?
Oh,
I mean, there could be an overlay using Google Glass on top of that person's image that shows them as a game character.
Really cool. And there may be game elements that surround them. So if that person had cast a, you know, spell of whirlwind protection, you might see, you know, whirlwind stuff flowing around them that you would be able to recognize because you're playing the game that has that characteristic in it. Cool.
Right.
Cool.
Who knows?
And the same thing would go with attacks and defenses, right? So using glass or embeddable, right? You know, like the version of, yeah, exactly. You point at somebody and gzoom, and something would shoot out and you could actually feel it because your rumble strip, which is built into your body now, kind of rumbles a bit.
Yeah. Yeah. In essence, it would be like a laser tag.
Ooh.
Where you would just use your body to shoot, right?
Yes.
And then you would feel it based on the devices that you're wearing.
I need to dig this up. I don't remember. Have I told you about the Assassin game that I'd created back in high school?
You did. And that's funny because I was just thinking about the Assassin game.
Yeah. Yeah. I have to dig this up because it was water-based, right? That was the deal. So you would be able to take care of business, so to speak, by putting water on your opponent, and that was considered, you know, a way to register a kill. A water or a cardboard dagger, right? So it wouldn't hurt. How cool. Yeah, that I could see that being a case. I could see a case of where the augmented reality allows you to create a game board anywhere, right? So you could have a holographic game board appear in front of you because you could see it, and then you can manipulate objects, you know, a la our favorite little Minority Report kind of interface. You know, you could play chess in thin air, so to speak, with a player that might be halfway around the world because you're picking up the piece and you're moving it where you want it to go. So that could be certainly a wearable. The embeddable part is intriguing to me because I think that's going to be just another total huge layer of technology that's ready for game interaction.
And it gets people off the couch too. You'd be out there. You'd really want to be out there socializing in person and playing face to face with that kind of an approach.
And meeting new people too, right? I mean, this would be a way to really find a way to enjoy meeting new people that are of a like mind to you because they're playing the same immersive game. Here's another thought, which would be we certainly enjoy going to the theater. We enjoy reading books. We just talked about this with Dan Brown. You know, do we have something for you? Can you imagine where there might be a chance to act out a movie, a play, a book by taking on the character or characteristics of the actors in that book and using the augmented reality, the way you're viewing the world, you're seeing the world, and that you're interacting with others to allow that to happen. So someone who might speak Finnish, you know, could actually be interacting with someone who speaks Croatian, and the translation would happen naturally and in real time in between them, and they could act out the story and gain the satisfaction of doing that. And they could do that together, physically together, or potentially in some sort of, you know, maybe specially designed room whose environment would change depending upon the person who was in there and the game or book or story or movie that they were acting out as another game.
I like it. We better stop talking and start patenting. That's all I can say.
maybe so. I don't know. This is just, it's fun to think about what the future might hold.
We like to riff.
Exactly. So I know it's a little bit of a short show this week. I'm trying to see if there's one other thing that might be worth bringing up, and my mind is going blank on me. Is there anything else that you see? Any other conferences or things that are coming up that we ought to mention for our audience?
There was the big Games for Change conference last week in New York City. And if any of our listeners have gone, we'd like to hear from you. We want to hear what your thoughts were about the conference. What struck you with regards to games that really you think are able to influence or change people's minds about things? That's of particular interest to me. Because the Games for Change movement, I think it's an interesting one. Games that can influence people. But I really ask myself if they would actually change someone's mind, especially with regards to some things that people are very, very, you know, stuck on. And It just makes me wonder, like, maybe if you're in the middle and you don't really know, then games like that might help sway you in a particular direction. But would these games actually get you to go from an A to a Z or from a Z to an A? I'm just curious about what other people's perspectives are. And if you've had a game that has actually done this for you.
That would be great to hear from our audience on that front. I would agree with you wholeheartedly. And that's makes a lot of sense why Ian Bogost was one of the people talking there, because persuasive games are definitely fit right into that mode where the intent of the game is to help you imagine that, yeah, there's a different way to think about something and, you know, do something different to bring around a different reality.
Yeah, because you gotta, you know, in this kind of dichotomy of our society today, you know, we're really polarized more than ever before. It just makes me wonder whether these games will actually, do they shift people from one of the sides to the other side? Or is it more like, you know, a game that speaks to you, you'll be like, yeah, that's why I believe in this. And it's not really influencing change per se.
It would be interesting to see, and it would be interesting to do some real, detailed research, psychological analytics on this, because it seems to me that most people have very deeply held beliefs on whatever it is that they care about. And getting people to move off their position even a bit is maybe not as easy as we think it is.
Oh, heck no. No. I think it's getting even harder than ever before. It's funny. I remember when I was in high school, I was part of a program and we were asked to debate a lot. You know, our classmates debated and we were told what our stance was going to be.
Right.
We were told what our stance was going to be. And I remember the teacher kept saying, okay, whatever you believe, you're going to be fighting for exact the opposite. And it was a good exercise. And it just, you know, I don't know why I'm talking about this, but it made me think of the whole being able to influence maybe by getting into other people's shoes. Maybe that's how you do it. I don't know.
I would think you're exactly right that it's a talent and a lost art in a lot of ways to be able to put yourself in some other people's shoes and then go forward with their objectives too.
Agreed.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and wrap up here. Thank you very much, everyone, for listening to another edition. We will be back with you again in a week's time with even more fun stuff. And we hope that you will give us your feedback, give us some further ideas, things that you're seeing you would like us to talk about. And you can reach us here a myriad of different ways, wherever finer podcasts are hidden and discoverable. You can find us on Twitter. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Google+, on Tumblr.
We're everywhere. We're everywhere.
We are everywhere. So thank you very much for connecting with us today. And we will talk to you again next week.
Thank you.
Bye. See ya.
You've been listening to Games at Work.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at gamesatwork_biz or at our website at gamesatwork.biz.